You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. Top story of the week, did you see the new Undercurrent News logo?
Sure did, Lauren. She's a beaut.
A subtle change, but one that reflects Undercurrent's core focus and strengths. And of course, you can also see that in the new look on the front page of our website, which also highlights our global pricing, U.S. wholesale pricing, and global trade platforms.
Check it out. We'd love to hear what you think.
Well, onto the real top story of the week. Russia and Ukraine began negotiating a ceasefire deal to end the war that began in February of 2022.
And that means that the lifting on the U.S. ban on Russian seafood could be in the future. Joining us on the pod to set the stage and let us know what this means for the snow and king crab sectors is Undercurrent editorial director Cliff White.
So really the stage gets set when U.S. President Donald Trump gets elected and takes office on January 20th. That was the beginning of a fundamental shift in U.S. policy towards Ukraine and Russia. Donald Trump has a long history, antagonistic history with Ukraine President Vladimir Zelensky, kind of revolved around his first impeachment, if you want to like go back in the archives and look that up. But long story short, Trump takes a different approach towards helping Ukraine and punishing Russia for invading Ukraine. And Trump also seems to have a buddy-buddy relationship with Vlad, Vladimir Putin.
His pal, Vlad.
Yeah, exactly. He's Russian President Vladimir Putin. And I think he was optimistic that he could get a deal done. He said he would end the war by day one. Obviously, we're past day 100. It still hasn't happened. He has definitely still committed to a fundamental shift in U.S. relations towards Russia. Under President Biden, it was bans on Russian seafood products and a whole bunch of other sanctions on Russia to punish them for invading Ukraine. Under Trump, it's, I want to talk with Vlad, I want to talk with Putin, and I want to make a deal. We're going to trade the lifting of sanctions and other economic incentives for a ceasefire and hopefully end to the war in Ukraine. So along those lines, the ground has kind of been laid with preliminary meetings in the Middle East between Secretary of State Marco Rubio, high-level Russian officials, and the Trump administration dragged everyone to I believe it was Istanbul last week for a big meeting. Trump was hoping to get Putin, Zelensky, and himself in a room to hash this thing out. So that's where we were last week. So to continue, ultimately that meeting didn't happen. Vladimir Putin did not show up to the meeting. Zelensky was there, but Trump didn't show up. There were talks between Ukraine and Russia. It was the first in several years where they had direct bilateral discussions. But it seems like Russia likes its position in Ukraine right now, thinks it can win more land on the battlefield. And so it made kind of wild demands. Ukraine wasn't ready to accept them. So then it was, what's going to happen? The current situation is that a ceasefire looks unlikely at the moment, but it's still more likely than it was under the presidency of Joe Biden. The carrot that continues to dangle is the U.S. market. So Russia is a huge producer of seafood, whitefish, crab are huge, king crab, opelio or snow crab, a bunch of other stuff that was selling big in the U.S. prior to the U.S. putting a ban on Russian seafood.
Yeah, so Russian seafood exports in 2021 to the U.S., you know, looking at the most valuable items for frozen snow crab, 18,799 tons worth $509.2 million. And that was just in 2020. Yeah, that was in 2021 before everything fell apart. Frozen king crab, 8,486 tons worth $419.7 million.
Undercurrent's got the data, don't we?
It's all right there. We have links back to it. So go to the website and beautiful charts.
So the key takeaway is, I wrote this article thinking that if a deal happened in this meeting, that the U.S. market could eventually reopen. That is a controversial thing still. The Alaska producers, which produce a lot of the same products, don't want Russian products coming into the U.S. Alaska's Senator Dan Sullivan has been vocal in opposing any kind of reopening, not tying it to the Ukraine war. So needless to say, it's controversial.
Yeah. I mean,
But
you also have to think about the retailers too. I mean, everyone took a strong stance and see we weren't going to carry this product. Are they going to be willing to take it back onto their shelves even? I mean, that has to be considered.
it does. And I think it's going to be a case-by-case basis that each retailer, each importer looks at the situation and decides what they want to do. But I did speak with some U.S. seafood companies that prior to the war imported a bunch of Russian seafood. And they say if Trump signs off on it and the ban gets lifted, that they'll start importing Russian products again. Both Trump and Putin are very hard to predict. And so 1 week it looks promising that the deal gets done. The next it looks like a deal's off. The former head of NOAA under Trump in his first term told me that he didn't think the ban should be lifted. However, both Trump and Putin are very unpredictable, and a deal may look off for the moment. It could be back on next week. We have this data, it could be next week that it becomes relevant again. So we should just wait and see.
So, at the same time that all of this is happening with Russia, the European Commission has sanctioned Russian fishing giant Nuriibo, one of the country's largest suppliers of cod, haddock, and pollock, as well as another firm named Merman Seafood. Hopping on the pod to break down the story and explain what it means for the EU is Undercurrent co-founder and editor-in-chief Tom Seaman.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting story, and it remains to be seen the implications of it. On the surface, when it broke, it seemed like a massive deal, and I think it is a significant story. But I think it remains to be seen what impact it's going to have on the markets. The two companies have been sanctioned. The EU has claimed that they're involved in vessels involved in espionage, so the companies have been sanctioned. But it seems that the sanctions are really around EU companies or individuals making funds available to them, as the EC statement said. So, when I spoke to the EC to try and get more information on this, it sounds like the sanction is really against a European buying directly from these two companies, but it doesn't prohibit, from the sound of it, a European buying from China, a Chinese processing company that has imported pollock, cod, or haddock from these companies, and then processed that and sent it to the European Union in fillet form. So there's definitely a significant trade of these companies sending fillets direct to the EU. You can see on the trade data, the EU is importing significant volumes of particularly cod and pollock fillets from Russia. Nuriibo has about 45% of the cod quota. Merman is a significant cod quota holder. Nuriibo has about 10 to 15% of the pollock quota. So it's definitely going to have an impact on this direct trade. But a lot of that volume could then be shifted. Say, these companies will maybe produce more headed and gutted products, send that to China or Vietnam or other Asian processing hubs. And then that product can, I think, from the sound of it, still come to the EU, which is an interesting development. And then also, and certainly Nuriibo, it's not Nuriibo doing the sales of their products. It's interconnected but separate sales companies. So a European company is not buying directly from Nuriibo. They're buying from other companies. I'm not exactly sure how Merman's operation works because it's a smaller business. Nuriibo is a giant company, one of the largest fishing companies in Russia, one of the largest seafood companies in the world. And so they operate in a sophisticated way. And again, from speaking to the European Commission, it sounds like potentially that may continue too. So I'm still in conversations with officials in Brussels around this and trying to get more information, but the way they explained it to me is it's not an economic sanction. It seemed like even the press department I was speaking with were confused about how this might actually work in practice. So I'm essentially trying to get more info. But like all these things, it's definitely going to ripple out. And I think over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, we'll see what impact it's having on pricing. The story broke on Tuesday night, and I was just getting my pricing ready for Wednesday, and it hasn't had any impact as of yet at that point. But yeah, we'll definitely see the impact over the next few weeks. The UK issued a sanctions package as well, but there is no mention of Nuriibo or Merman in the UK's package. It's related to different things. And obviously, the UK is a major market for Russian whitefish as well, both directly imported, even though there's a 35% additional tariff, it's still significant volumes directly imported and also via China in headed and gutted form. So again, that can also continue because the UK has not sanctioned these companies. Which is also interesting because Nuribo actually used to have a significant office in the UK, which they, closed down a couple of years ago and moved to a kind of service company model, clearly anticipating something like this, I would assume. They maybe saw the writing on the wall that having an actual, company called Nuribo Europe in the UK maybe wasn't a good look, and that they needed to kind of adjust their model. So that's another thing to watch. And a lot of people are also looking at whether the UK will potentially, take further action because the European Commission has, and whether the European Commission will look more into this and maybe come up with something that's got kind of more teeth and less kind of potential end arounds around it. But then obviously the thing is whether buyers, major buyers might well see this and kind of say, even if technically, we can maneuver around this, do we want to? Do we want to, to risk the optics of buying from a company that has been sanctioned for espionage, a Russian company that's been sanctioned for espionage? Whether, you believe that that's fair or true or not, that's really not for me to say. I'm just talking about the market impact. Nuribo denies it's true. They issued a statement to me today saying, it's completely false and, as obviously you'd expect. But you might well find, that blue chip buyers don't want to deal with these companies without having looked into the basis for it because of the optics and because, of how this could end up looking.
Yes, and actually that's kind of something similar to what I brought up with Cliff a little while earlier. Do retailers, are they going to be willing to kind of reopen up, these conversations and put these products back on the shelves? And you said right now that's not an issue with Nuribo products, but
Yeah, I think, well, basically the Russian fish has never stopped, being hugely present in the UK and the European market. It's obviously not labeled as such, but it's never stopped and it won't stop, in my opinion, because it is just such a huge chunk of the supply. So, and ultimately I think customers maybe don't hugely care. And certainly the buyers are the ones that have the power because, like Aldi in Germany could, label that it's Russian pollock on their, fish finger packet, but they kind of put the fishing zone, like where it is, which is ambiguous because, some of it's there's some crossover. And if you then look into it, you can see it's Russian because of the fishing zone. And often they have a traceability thing. Well, in fact, they all have a traceability thing that allows you to find the fish is Russian, but it doesn't say it anywhere. On one hand, you could think it's going to drive pricing up because potentially these large companies could be out of the market. But what usually happens when that happens is the product gets shifted elsewhere. And that if, for example, these companies have to produce more H&G, headed and gutted cod, haddock and pollock, and send that to China because they can't send their fillets direct, that could end up suppressing the H&G price because they're going to be focused on, that chain and that production. But if their products are ultimately still work their way back into the market through other channels, then it could end up with a minimal pricing impact. Or if they really are kind of shut out and that further action is taken to mean that the product kind of can't come back into the market from China, then obviously that is going to really drive the price, particularly on cod, when the quotas of cod have been reduced dramatically in the past few years anyway. It was cut 25% for this year, it was cut 20% the year before in the Barents Sea. And Nuribo is, 40 to 45% of that. Merman is significant as well. So, if those two are out of the market, that will really drive pricing. But I think ultimately, probably the fish may end up making its way to the market.
links to those stories that Cliff and Tom talked about and much more can be found in the show notes on undercurrentnews.com. Now, on to some of my favorite seafood stories of the week. And this one is super relevant as I just flew international for Seafood Expo Global. Shout out to the air traffic controllers at Newark Airport still using floppy disks. United Airlines, a Chicago-based company with eight major hubs, has unveiled its new bougie United elevated interior that will have anyone with a lax accounting department booking their next international flight in the United Polaris Studio Suite.
This new Boeing 787-9 aircraft features not only Starlink connectivity and larger 4K LED setback screens, but also a caviar service and champagne pairing. United said that it's part of more than $150 million investment that the airline made in total food and beverage improvements.
As seafood journalists, we probably need to investigate this further, Lauren.
100% agree. United, have your people talk to our people about how we can review this caviar service while 40,000 feet up in the air.
Dubai's Emirates has already been offering caviar, unlimited caviar, no less. We don't know where the airlines are sourcing your caviar from, but this trend of offering a complimentary comes as Chinese caviar prices are projected to decline over the next 2 to 3 years.
China is the world's largest caviar producer, with exports reaching 322 metric tons in 2024. This data and more can be found on the Undercurrent News Global Trade Portal. But this figure is a 16.7% increase from 2023, and industry experts say the domestic sturgeon stocks are only continuing to expand. Louis Harkel, global head of price reporting for Undercurrent, reported this week on current prices for Siberian sturgeon caviar, and you can visit Undercurrent News to check out more of that pricing information.
Is it bad to say that I'd be more interested in a flight that offers endless Cheddar Bay biscuits?
Oh my gosh, you and me both, sister. Get our fanny packs ready.
So moving back within our budgets, I for one was excited to see that Red Lobster's endless shrimp fiasco has not killed the shrimp lovers' all-you-can-eat dream. Another big U.S. restaurant chain, Applebee's, is taking a swing at an all-you-can-eat shrimp campaign, even after the terrible headlines and bankruptcy filing made by Red Lobster in 2024. So for a limited time, you can feast and feast and feast and feast on unlimited double crunch shrimp, or riblets or chicken tenders, but we're focusing on the shrimp here, for just $15.99. And as I'm sure y'all will recall, Red Lobster's $20 endless shrimp promotion was made a full-time menu item in June 2023 and blamed for $11 million in losses, which caused the company to raise the price to $25. The campaign was the source of a lot of criticism and ultimately was one of the final straws that caused the seafood chain to file for Chapter 10 bankruptcy protection in May 2024, also closing about 100 locations. But of course, there's a lot more to the story there involving Red Lobster's major shareholder, Thai Union. And you can go to the website if you want to learn the full story there.
But back to Applebee's. The casual restaurant chain, which is owned by Dine Brands Global, has more than 1,600 locations in 17 countries and territories. And like everyone else in the industry, they're also struggling with the impacts of consumer price sensitivity related to the current operating environment. Dine Brands reported that year-on-year domestic comparable same restaurant sales for Applebee's specifically declined 2.2% year-on-year for the first quarter of 2025. The company also noted in its financial results that domestic development activity for Applebee's franchisees is between 20 and 35 net fewer restaurants. However, the restaurant group does have some things in the pipeline, such as enhancing the menu and introducing value offerings in an effort to win back customers.
Enter the limited time all you can eat double crunch shrimp promotion. Honestly, the timing couldn't be better, right? You know, restaurants,
It
yeah. I mean, restaurant sales overall have remained flat so far this year through April 2025. According to the latest report from the National Restaurant Association, total sales are up, but only slightly, and that growth is primarily being driven by menu price gains. So things aren't looking too hot heading into those summer months either.
I see what you did there. And you're right. KPMG, a company that provides audit, tax, and advisory services, recently put out its summer 2025 Consumer Pulse report. Of US consumers surveyed this past March, 69% said they are eating more at home rather than dining out. 85% of those people cited budget constraints as their primary reason. When people are going out, they are actively looking for discounts.
You know, so I just came back from Barcelona, and I gotta say the prices there are like completely different from I feel like what I'm paying over here in
Way
the
better,
US.
right?
Yes,
Yeah.
like ex way cheaper. And then plus you're not tipping on top of it, or it's included
Right.
into the price. You know, so I take that into account when I'm going out. So I probably am not going out as much because, you know, the prices of food is going up, so the overall total bill is going up, and then so my tip now is also increased. So if I don't want to pay that, I'm just not going out. Have
Plus the
you?
cost of the
You
babysitter.
don't bring the kids. I like that. Maybe that's where I'm also going wrong.
Well, I say that, but I have only been out to probably McDonald's in the last 30 days.
Yeah, we did Burger King, and it was because they had a Peppa Pig toy. So,
Oh, nice.
yeah. Anyway, it's about that time for our US listeners. It's the start of Memorial Day weekend. So let's crack some beers, fire up the grill, and welcome UCN price reporter Gary Morrison on the pod to talk about what seafood items will likely be making an appearance at this year's barbecue.
Yeah, I mean, you know the grills will be going this weekend, weather permitting. And really, you know what that means here in the US for Memorial Day is burgers and hot dogs, right? But we don't want to forget to throw in a little surf with that turf. And by that, I mean some shrimp. It's the most consumed seafood protein for the Memorial Day holiday. It's real easy to put on the grill right next to those burgers, dogs, and chicken as well. And here, what's happening in the US, prices have really settled after a furious rally starting April 2nd as buyers and sellers now address how the new shift higher in prices will impact demand. And I guess this weekend's a really good starting point to see it, right? And to see if shrimp is really going to be on the menu. But if you look at some of those ads, shrimp is really quite competitive on the wholesale level compared to some of the other proteins.
If you could find it on the ad, I mean, I'm looking at a shop right now. That's our local grocer. I had to flip to page six to find shrimp because yeah, right front and center, top round London broil, $3.99 a pound, 80% lean ground beef, $2.99 a pound. Flipping forward to page six for shrimp, $10.99 for fresh jumbo domestic shrimp. They're looking at 21 to 25 count per pound. So that's wild caught raw.
You know that those ads are in line of you know how people see Memorial Day. You got London broil, especially on the Jersey Shore, very popular. Hamburgers and you know other land-based proteins. So we got to get seafood up front and center somehow.
Well, at least Acme, they do have a front page Memorial Day savings. They have their ad is shrimp savings 2 pound bag sale. So their average same thing, 2 pound bags, $12 each for large raw shrimp. Same thing for cooked shrimp, up to $22 each. So it's actually nice to see that front and center on the Acme page. That's probably like the only one though. I went to Publix and you had to get like to page four to find shrimp there. But again, great prices on White Trip, $8.99 a pound.
If you look at those price points, it's really compelling against those other proteins. So, but if you really want to talk the unofficial start of summer and really the rest of the summer, I mean, let's talk lobster rolls, right? I mean, a really high interest item for a lot of people around the country, especially, you know, the Boston area. But the popularity is growing pretty much everywhere in the US, driven by some of our friends in the industry. And if you're a buyer of lobster meat, you know, there continues to be a major sell-off. I mean, this is the fourth straight week of significantly lower prices, and that's providing ample opportunity to book some lower prices ahead of the competitive season coming up. So even with the limited inventory and the very slow start to the live season in Canada due to some weather issues, consumer sentiment figure that we talked about earlier in the pod is negative. So people are feeling, you know, feeling the pinch, and I think that's a lot of what's driving some of the lower prices in lobster meat here now. And then I'll just save maybe, you know, some of our favorites for the next pod, and that's crab legs.
I don't know what Memorial Day weekend parties you're going to that they have crab legs at, but I got to start hanging out with your friends, Gary.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's why I'm saving for the next pod. You know, hamburgers, hot dogs, and you know, maybe we'll get some shrimp, right?
Well, if you are serving crab legs at your party, hit Gary and I up because that's where we want to be next year.
And getting into salmon leading into Memorial Day, we're seeing mixed dynamics across origins and product forms. Fresh Chilean fillets saw some firming in week 21, supported by a shorter production week due to a national holiday in Chile on May 21st, and consistent demand into the US thanks to Monday's holiday that helped clear some excess inventory that was left over from Mother's Day. Whole fish from Chile held steady with seasonal Memorial Day retail and food service interests, providing a bit of a supportive tone. Meanwhile, East Coast Canadian whole fish values softened with an increase of supply from West Coast, providing more availability there, while Norwegian fillets held steady, kept in check by softening demand post Mother's Day, but modest supply disruption from a recently reported algal bloom. With the holiday acting as a second seasonal anchor point following Mother's Day, demand appears strong enough to maintain steady movement, particularly for fresh fillets.
Well, that does it for us this week. Lauren, grab your bathing suit.
Amanda.
We gotta hit the beach.
Bye.
Bye.